Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. Today again, it's Dr. Tim Hayes, and I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, Aramaic Friday, and I apologize. I'm trying to walk and talk and do the same thing. This is December the 12th, and we welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. And Dr. Tim, I don't see Dale on the switchboard yet. So how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very well. How are the van preparations proceeding?
Well, we parked the two vans in the Lowe's parking lot yesterday and continuously went in and bought a shelf or bought screws or bought something. And so we've got it more or less put together. My stepson and Richard are out there right now with Michael. They're trying to put up a wall between the back and the drivers to protect us from all the stuff that's in the van, keep it from coming forward. So they're working on that, and we've got about a third of the stuff loaded in it. So as soon as they finish that wall, we can finish loading the rest of the stuff. We have to be on the road in the morning. So... It's coming.
Well, exciting adventure. I appreciated the posting you did of the pictures on Facebook so I could see the new van and send you guys loving energy with that image in mind. And we're glad to hear it's going well. For all
yeah,
of the...
Yeah, we just need to... add a few more days or hours to the day. If we could do that, that would be awesome.
Well, just know that it's all perfect and that you will get the rest you need and breathe lovingly through it and be where you need to be when you need to be there. And please let me know if Dale shows up on the keyboard, or if Dale, if you're listening and you haven't pressed one, do that, because that'll bring your number to the top so that Jeannie can see it. And we're looking forward to sharing this show with you. And again, as we do every day on this show, we're here to try and support people as they learn and practice exactly what Michael and Jeannie and all those who love them have had multiple opportunities to practice all week, which is removing whatever is inside of them that's less than love when the outside events in our lives don't go the way our conscious logical mind thinks they should go. And there have been multiple opportunities, from one blown engine to another blown engine to time crunch, and for us to practice supporting Michael and Jeannie and those who love them in just knowing it's all going to be okay and holding the space of love and returning our focus of awareness to that. And sometimes that's not so easy because we've got a lot of stuff stored in us and we've been conditioned by the culture to think and feel other things. So when that happens, there's a tool that was made available by Yeshua a couple thousand years ago. And Yeshua probably wasn't the only one who knew it, but he probably gave some of the best, clearest instructions on how to do this. And Yeshua is the person that most people today call Jesus. And the tool that Yeshua gave was the tool of forgiveness. And we lost its meaning, and it was translated into pardoning and different things. But in essence, it's a very powerful tool for going inside myself and removing any thoughts of fear or sadness or frustration, or what's going to happen if Michael and Jeannie can't get on the road in time, and what's going to happen if one more shelf falls over or one more screw gets stripped instead of staying threaded. And when I have those energies that get generated by those thoughts about what-ifs on the negative side of things, it's resonating an energy in me that really doesn't belong there. And the tool of forgiveness is a tool to go inside myself and literally deconstruct, literally dismantle and remove, cancel all of those energies that don't belong in me and restore me to the alignment of the conscious awareness of my true nature, that loving feeling which is always available to me in every moment if I can train myself to choose it. If I can train myself to be aware of its constant presence in my life. And I was thinking the other day, you know, I was raised a Catholic, and then we had to read this Baltimore Catechism and get conditioned and brainwashed to recite it back. And there were a lot of contradictions in it, and it was very frustrating. Well, it wasn't frustrating, but I got frustrated a lot as a child because I would read the contradictions and raise my hand and ask a question about it and be told by the teachers that I was being obstinate or I was trying to be a rabble-rouser. But one of the things from that Baltimore Catechism they probably had absolutely true was that there is this God presence. And that if God ever took his awareness, her awareness, off of me, I would simply cease to exist. The energy of creation is constantly flowing through me. It gave rise to me, what I call the physical body and the soul and spirit that's attached to it. It can't be different. I can't ever be separated from it. I can use my conscious logical mind to create all kinds of twists and knots and frustrations, and I can tie my own conscious logical energies in all kinds of knots and produce all kinds of negative feelings. But I can't change the fact that I'm in the flow of creation. I am made of the stuff of the Creator. I am able to access at any point in time my true nature as the energy of love, and it's a choice. It's a choice. It really becomes even more of a choice once I get exposed to it in tools like this. And the forgiveness process utilizes the alarm system that the Creator put into my mind-body-energy system, and that is any negative emotion. And like any good alarm system, when it goes off, it tells me right where the source of the problem is. So there isn't an alarm going off in southern Nebraska that tells me about a problem in me here in Illinois. The alarm goes off in me here in Illinois. And wherever the alarm goes off, that's where the problem is. And so when I feel anger, fear, sadness, hurt, guilt, shame, condemnation, blame, ridicule, if I feel pulled to gossip about somebody else, this is my internal alarm system telling me, hey, Tim, your thoughts are off the mark. You're looking at something either inside yourself or outside of you, and you're not viewing it the way your Creator is viewing it. Your Creator is looking at that very thing, at you and the thing you're looking at right now, and has some very different thoughts about it. And the pressure, the tension, the pain, the frustration you're feeling is because you're not holding the same thoughts about yourself or whoever you're looking at as your creator is holding. And if you simply align your thoughts with the flow of creation, with the essence of your true nature, the pain goes away. And not only does the pain go away, but you get filled with a sense of presence and expansion and joy and creativity that the humans have never been able to find a word to even approximate. So don't keep talking about it. Just go there, Tim. Move toward what feels better inside of yourself. Know that you can get to that feeling by removing everything that's less than that. Use your alarm system constructively to start breathing. And keep breathing nice, deep, connected breaths because it helps pull your awareness to your true nature in your center. And then apply a tool like forgiveness, which is a tool which has me identify the goal I'm focusing on that keeps me distracted from the true nature of my upset. And then learn to cancel that goal, no matter how good it seems to my conscious logical mind or how justified I might be in having it. And keep your breath going and ask that higher part of wisdom within you, the part of you that keeps your breath moving and your heart pumping all night long when you're asleep and your food digesting, ask that part of you that's tapped into your creative energy to show you the hidden part of your mind and breathe. Be willing to see whatever it shows you and keep breathing. Notice the shift in your experience and notice when your alarm system gets shut off and you start moving to that more joyful, creative, expansive energy within you. And that becomes your conscious experience. And that's forgiveness. And that's what we're here to practice. That's the energy we're meant to be living in and from all day, every day. And that's a tool that's made available on the website at www.whyagain.org. And if you go to that webpage and click on the link that says Start Here or click on the red and white bullseye, it takes you to a page where you can download the 7-step worksheet process, Michael's Chapter 24 of his book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again?, which describes this process. And another link that'll take you to a page where you can download, I don't know, maybe 12 or more audio files of shows just like this. All of this is absolutely free. All of this happens and you don't have to sign up for an email address and get put on a list and get marketed more stuff. All of this is Michael and Jeannie's gift to you, because you're alive and because you deserve it and because it's your birthright and because it's possible, once you know that it's possible, for you to choose for love, for you to choose to live only love and therefore teach only love moment to moment in your day-to-day existence. And to do that with greater ease and clarity, all you have to do is look for and find whatever's less than love within you and remove it. And here's the tool. It's called the Reality Management Worksheet, and it's available for free if you have internet access. And we'd love to support you in discussing that process, discussing any glitches you have into applying it successfully in your life, hearing about the successes you're having in applying it. And that's what we're here for in this radio show. And I'll ask Jeannie, as I take a breath, if we have anybody with their hand up or anything going on in the chat room we should pay attention to, or if Dale has joined us.
Dale has just joined us. Welcome, Dale.
Sorry. My travel schedule is really intense right now. I went to sleep last night. I need to make notes or something and hang them off my nose. It was like all of a sudden my phone was face down even in the car, and Loretta's like, she's got a text that said show, and she's like, show? And I'm like, show? And she's like, show? And then I'm like, what's the number? And she said 423, and I'm like, oh, no. So anyway, sorry about that. But we'll make the remaining time good.
It's It's all good. We're glad you are getting the sleep you need, and we're glad you're here
now. We had to pull off the we're on the New Jersey Turnpike, and we had to pull off, get to a rest area, and then swap for her to get into the driver's seat and me to get over into the passenger seat. So we're all good now.
Well, we're glad you're here. What's on your mind today?
I've been doing a lot of – I'm on a little tour that we were in Williamsburg and then New Jersey, and now we're back down to Annapolis, Maryland. And then tomorrow I'm back in New Jersey, Princeton, and then Haddon Township, and then out to Cleveland and home. But we've been doing a little – and then from after Cleveland is Atlanta and then Myrtle Beach. But we've been doing I've been doing these events called – Birthing the Cosmic Christ, A Winter Solstice Awakening, and talking about the, I've been talking about the astrological basis of the Christmas story and how that wrapped itself into the Jesus story. And people look at, as an example, the birth sequence of Jesus, thinking that what they're reading is something that actually happened to a man historically, not knowing the astrological basis behind that. And then I take it basically from the cosmic story down to the Jesus story, and then I take it from the Jesus story and get people back to that realization. The intent is that if you're still looking at someone or something outside of you, then you're still missing the point. So I call it the feminine Christmas story. It's a way of sort of internalizing the how we look at the Jesus story, and we look at these physical things that we think are facts or some sort of historical occurrences, not realizing that what they are is more overarching archetypes that are throughout all kinds of religions, all throughout history. And what we know from Yeshua is definitely no exception. I love what Joseph Campbell says, because he says that a perfectly good definition for religion or for mythology is other people's religion. And a perfectly good definition for religion is misunderstood mythology, and that sort of sets the base for it, helping people to realize that, and we think of mythology as in somehow myths or made-up stories, but that's not at all what mythology means. Mythology is basically finding ways through story or sort of creating grand archetypes through story and different ways of relaying messages that you put in the form that looks like basically you're looking at a story or something about someone's life, when in a lot of ways what you're actually seeing is something that's much more internal, something that's much more experiential. And if we keep looking outside of ourselves and look at it as a physical thing, we miss basically where the light was pointing towards. So it's been great, the events I've been doing, because we use crystal singing bowl. We light the room up with candles and oil lamps, and it's just really profound. Use a buffalo hoop drum, and we do some Aramaic toning, and I talked a bit about the Christmas story and a lot of the basis of it and how it goes back thousands of years, long before it was ever actually put down in the New Testament, the Christian Bible, and it's just a really fascinating, very magical experience. So that's sort of been what's central in my mind the past few days.
Well, that's wonderful. We had our Thursday night Mind Shifter support group last night and watched a chunk of the beginning of your DVD, The Word, and had the review of Albert LaChance talking about how the teachings that were supposed to lead us to a higher level spiritual awareness have become so crystallized that they are actually the barrier that keeps us from having the spiritual experience that they're describing.
And yes. Albert put it into words perfectly. He talked about how it boils down and hardens and becomes a barrier that prevents that transmission of consciousness, of the very thing that we're looking for. It's meant to bring us back to being, but when we're, like as Michael would say, if we're looking at it in the physical sense, we create this sort of non-being story, and we look at it as a physical thing that somehow you'll get something out of it. If you look at, as an example, what at least appears to be the lifetime of Yeshua in the New Testament, and you look at it and you look back fondly as this, you know, great man that did amazing things, whatever, however you want to view it, you're going to get something from it. But the truth of the reality is that very common themes run through so much of the actual life story of Yeshua in terms of where he was born and the timing and, you know, the three kings, the star in the east, dead for 3 days, arose on the third day, Christmas morning, just all of it that people just don't know. And, you know, it's been real clear to me the last couple of years, especially the last year, and I say it a lot, how people, I really see that, number one, people are opening up a lot more. A lot of people are opening up a lot more, but I also see a lot of people clamping down a lot more. And I've become really clear that I'm not really here for us per se, those in our generation. I really feel like I'm here for especially the ones that are coming up that haven't been indoctrinated yet, that haven't, you know, had that sort of all of the stories forced on them in any way, such that they are still open and we can allow those little ones to just sort of be who they are and be authentic and open in their own light rather than us forcing them into these belief systems. Most people don't realize that the what we know of as the modern United States evangelical Christian view is only about 3 or 4 decades old, these ideas. And most people don't realize that. And it's something that's really only thought in America, in the U.S. People don't think in the way that we do here in the U.S. about Jesus. It's something very, not even in Canada, which is an interesting thing. People don't realize how sort of segregated we are from the whole of the world. So, it becomes really beautiful and enchanting and, for me, exciting when you can peel back the layers of what looks like a story and realize that there's something much deeper there. And the story isn't really about someone outside of me. It's about what's happening internally for me. It's about the being level of my being. And, yeah. So it's really, really beautiful to be able to move beyond that.
Well, we were having several discussions throughout the week, and somebody called in with the idea of the difference between the old and the new paradigm, and it led me to talk about how Krishnamurti was the first teacher that I actually tuned into, who said at such a pure level, every problem you've got is a result of your thought. And the thought is not the thing. Part of our conditioning is to believe that when I say the word tree, and I can describe a tree and its branches, and I can describe an oak as a different from an ash tree, that I know the tree, and that my description of the word is the same as the tree. And that's pretty absurd, because a tree is a vibrant living thing, and it's never the same 2 days in a row. And well, how much more so is that true with us as people? And so if I think I know the truth because I've heard a teacher speak, or I've read a scripture, and now I have the truth in me, and I'm carrying it around in my thoughts in this belief system or this paradigm that I've created, every bit of energy that I pour into my certainty that I know the truth because I know these words, because I know their meaning, because I know the dogma and the doctrine and the paradigm, every bit of energy I pour into that pulls me out of the flow of conscious awareness of real life in the moment. It's all dead. It's all from the past. And I know you can talk about this, Dale. You can talk beautifully when you get open about the Christ consciousness and the Christ mind and how loaded down it is with libraries of thought.
Well,
or not.
You know, it's so, yeah, I love it when you say when you get open. It's amazing how it's so crystal clear for me. And sometimes I forget that it's not necessarily crystal clear for everyone who's in front of me. And that's the thing is, like, on a day-to-day basis, sometimes I may feel it's more of a challenge to be sort of in the open space when I'm up doing my thing on a stage or with a group of people, because so many are there, at least most of them are there, to be able to be more open and start removing those veils, the bushel baskets and the layers. Obviously, you know, that's a pretty place that's conducive to being open, but sometimes in the everyday world, what somehow appears to be separate, which isn't separate, sometimes it's not so easy to remember that. And, yeah, it's one of those things that I've said over and over again, I really wouldn't have gotten if I hadn't started through going to Heartland and starting through Michael's perception of the work, because I really feel like everything else is a detail. And it's pretty actually exciting to see Michael, as time goes on, really sort of focusing in even more through the words with, you know, certain things, like he says, being and non-being, and talking about digital, analog versus digital, and being able to get into that. And, you know, what's most important is truth is a direct experience, not a thought system. It's not a belief. It's, you know, I love that in the where it does say, it says, you know, knowing the truth will set you free. A lot of time I hear people say, oh, the truth will set you free. It's like the truth isn't going to do anything for you. It's knowing of it. It's gnosis of it, which doesn't mean knowledge in the way, the word knowledge today doesn't mean what it meant 2,000 years ago. Knowledge today means things, basically the thoughts that you hold in your head, essentially. Whereas back then, knowing meant something much more intimate, a very deep, open, feminine realization rather than masculine thoughts. And I love what, I think it's in As a Man Thinketh from James Allen, where he says, all suffering is the result of wrong thought in some direction. And I've always loved that. I don't know if I'm right on board completely with the word wrong, but definitely I would say, you know, as Michael would say, error, an error in thought. And all suffering comes from that. And when we obsess with the thoughts, we miss that, the realization that really the thoughts are the bushel baskets, which doesn't really mean they're bad. It just means that the real truth with a capital T, the real experience is beneath the thoughts. It's beneath the beliefs. And, like I say, the young ones, the really young ones that are coming in, they get that on so many levels without having to be told. I'm excited to say we've been scheduling a lot of toning circles for children and teens lately, too. We've got them set up in Tallahassee, Florida. I think Port St. Lucie, Florida. We just scheduled one for Asheville, North Carolina. We got a few going in California, where I'm specifically going to be doing events in addition to my sort of more adult-themed events, although kids are welcome to all of my events, but being able to bring toning in from a way that's more, sort of, I guess you could say, more fun, less heady in the way that I would for a grown adult. We're going to be doing it in a much more fun way without so many of the spoken details, but doing like a lot of the toning and having open discussion about how it feels. And I'm really excited about that because I feel... I've seen what toning does, and that's why I do it at the beginning of all of my events, because people get right into the experience, and that I don't have to come out trying to capture their mind with great thoughts, as 99.9% of speakers come out, and they've got to start, you know, whatever it is, busting jokes or something, whatever it is in the beginning, which I used to do, and then it was like as soon as I started toning in the beginning, first toning a single word, and then usually toning the Lord's Prayer, the Beatitudes, maybe the Magnificat, and starting with toning, all of a sudden I realized that connected people in with truth. And then really what happened from that point really didn't matter so long as it came from that place of presence. So, or the conscious awareness, you know, that you were speaking of, the being mind. And that's really, you know, that's the key, is coming from that rather than the layers above that.
Well, I love what you're saying, and I heard you kind of pull back from the word wrong, and when you have, you know, thought that's not in line with what's actually happening, and the piece that really helps me with that is to see it as it's an alarm system. An alarm system isn't bad or wrong, it's there for a purpose. And so when I feel, you know, in the James Allen, all suffering is the result of thinking in a wrong direction, it's all suffering is the result of thinking in a direction that's not in alignment with the truth, with the creative force trying to express through you with the thoughts of the Creator. So realign your thoughts, and the suffering is no more. The alarm gets turned off when the problem's been removed.
Yeah, and it's even more. It's even. I would even go so far as to say it's almost. I think some of the new thought idea was realign our thoughts, and I think what the now thought idea is sort of what I see coming through now, is goes even further in, you know, the recognition of the thought, letting go of those thoughts, and allowing presence to birth new thought, or birth now thought, I should say, into awareness. Because I think what we did for so long, for decades in the 20th century, was constantly getting in and hammer and nailing our thoughts and trying to change our thoughts in that way. And one of the issues with that is when we start changing our thought, what's manifest or what's obvious to us, what the base level of being is saying, okay, well, not the base level of being, but right above that, it's basically we're sending the message to ourselves that something's not right, we're not doing this right, we got to change our thoughts. And while that's a nice sort of system, there's something that's much deeper than that, which is, you know, using forgiveness to remove whatever those impure thoughts or those error thoughts are, and actually allowing presence to inform fresh thought without the addiction to the thought itself. And I think that's the thing that I'm seeing within New Thought. I speak at a lot of Unity and Centers for Spiritual Living, and I really see a lot of places that are really addicted to the idea of new thought. But what can be unfortunate for that is most of new thought is based on ideas that are 100 years old, at least culturally, or over 100 years, which is great. We talk about Yeshua from 2,000 years ago. But what people are missing is that it's not about quoting Ernest Holmes. It's not about just quoting like what the Fillmore said within Unity. It's about connecting into what they were speaking of and allowing that to inform us rather than constantly. And that's the thing with the Yeshua teachings that I feel is so important in my work, is I'm constantly telling people it's not about him, it's not about me, it's about you or yourself. And for the next person, it's about them, and for the next person, it's about them. Not about repeating. People can, exactly what you were saying earlier, Tim, is that, you know, just because we can memorize the stuff and repeat it doesn't mean that we actually have an experience of it, a direct truth of that. And, I see that really happening within a lot of new thought, is it's a lot, some place, not a lot, there's some places I go to that it really, to me, feels like old thought. And I can feel it. You can sense it in the room, where you can almost even look around the room too and see, and you can see that there's not a lot of new people that come to some places. There's not a lot of freshness. There's not a lot of openness. And what that is it's just that sort of, it's insanity in more of a beautiful way, in that it's just a regurgitation of the old ideas. And just because those ideas were more free and thought 100 years ago, it's really time for us to let go, use those as guides, use those as mileposts even, but be able to let go of that and allow us to move forward from here. Because I've been seeing it really clear that a lot of the younger children that come to a lot of events and come to a lot of churches or spiritual centers, they're just not interested in clinging on to another idea, even if it's slightly more free than whatever the standard Christian or evangelical idea is. They just want to be open. And that's the thing that I'm really remembering, and I'm seeing that. Why I keep telling people, you know, I'm not really here for you, I'm here for your children or your grandchildren, because they're open, and I'm really here to help us at least let go enough so that they can just stay open, rather than us needing to indoctrinate them with something that we think is correct or right. I think really if they get forgiveness and they understand that and they put that into practice, you know, on a daily basis, a moment-to-moment basis, I think really so much of the rest will manifest itself or grow itself through them. So I really see that clearly, and that's pretty much exactly what you were talking about. You know, when I finally called into the show, is it's not about the ideas or the beliefs. It's about seeing beneath those, actually removing those to be that open channel. And when we're the open channel, whatever ideas, thoughts, or words come from that, they're going to come from that place of presence, from that place of openness, awareness, and being, rather than non-being. And I'm excited for it. I've been saying lately, too, in my events, the religion and spirituality, and especially Christianity, of what people know today in the United States, I can clearly see will have very little resemblance to what's going to be here in 30 or 40 years. If we look 4 to 5 decades ahead, I can clearly see that what most people think of as evangelical Christianity today, with the judgment, the homophobia, the hatred, the racism that's not spoken of, that's shoved under the carpet, a lot of that, it's not in all of it, but it's really strong. A lot of that's going to be on the fringe, if it even exists anymore. So I see that shift happening. I see it. Am I still on?
Don't go away. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I heard you when I started responding, but apparently when I pushed my mute button, it didn't go off. So anyway, I join you in that observation. I've been amazed over the past few years alone. When I go out to do presentations, sometimes at business groups, and I did one just yesterday morning, and the level of irritability, frustration, and resistance to some of the concepts I put out is decreasing dramatically year by year. And and you know, just for instance, yesterday I did a brief talk about anger as a survival level defense mechanism. And so if you start to feel angry about anything, just check your environment real quickly and make sure that you and your loved ones aren't being physically threatened with life and death. And if you realize that that's not the case, then turn your focus inside and realize this is your alarm system telling you your thoughts are off the mark. And usually I get people who want to shout me down and tell me that I'm telling them that they need to just let people abuse them and not have a response.
I've never heard that before.
I hear that one all the time.
But more and more as I do this work, those questions are less intense and they're fewer and farther between. So Jeannie, as long as you've piped up, do you have any comments, or is there anybody with a hand up?
No one has their hand up, and there's no questions in the chat room. My phone actually dropped about the time when everybody got silent, and I had to dial back in. But there is a question in the chat room now. It says, Dale, a friend asked me what was the real meaning of our, quote-unquote, father at the beginning of the Lord's Prayer. He has just finished his third round of chemo. I would love your share, please.
Well, I sort of have to boil it down in a nutshell. I will say that the word in the beginning of the Lord's Prayer is abun. The un sound is our. If you were talking to one person and I said, this is yours, if I was saying something to one person like, this is your father, I would say hun. I would say hun as an H-O-U-N, you could say in English, transliterating. If I was talking to a lot of people at once, I would say all of yours, like I'm talking to 10 people or 100 people. Now, when you hear abwun, that's where the our comes from. And what that really means is all of you or all of us. I think what's more important is the ab, the A-B sound, which are the aleph bet in Aramaic, the ab. Ab is the sound that's where the sound or the translation of father comes from. And a lot of people don't realize, they simply don't realize that the ab sound is so, we don't actually know how old the sound is. It's so ancient, definitely long before the lifetime of Jesus, or even most likely before even the Torah was written down, ab or abba. If you look at it just linguistically by letters, the ab sound, you have the first two letters of the alphabet. First is aleph, the second is bet or bet. And the aleph sound means everything is part of one singular whole. In other words, as much as your mind is able to comprehend everything at the same time, meaning all of existence, all people, all souls, past, present, future, inside, outside, the greatest expansion, the tiniest contraction, the everything or the all, that's what the ah sound means. And the second letter of the alphabet is bet or bet, and what that meant was house. but it didn't mean, I say this a lot, it didn't mean house like a physical house that you look at, like a frame of wood or brick or whatever that may be. What it meant was that my perception of the ah or the aleph, the first letter, my perception of that is that it has an inside and an outside, a light and a dark, positive, negative, masculine, feminine, awake, asleep, alive, dead. It's speaking of duality. The first letter of the alphabet, which is the first letter of the word Abun or Abba, which is father, our father, or simply father, the first letter means everything is part of one singularity or one single unity of being. The second letter means it has an appearance of duality, as appearance of a non-manifest, manifest, etc. And there's different meanings that buff, the bait sound, also means. It means in the or inside of something. It means burst open, like if I were to take, like, say, a tomato and squeeze it, and when it pops, that would be what that means. It means burst open. That B sound, the bait sound, also means blessing. So if you look at just the first letter, it means everything's part of one singular whole, one singularity of being. The second letter means that singularity, that one singular non-dual wholeness, burst itself open as its own blessing within itself, you could say. And that's just the ob sound. Now, that's generally translated as father, ab or abba. If you look at abba, you've got the one singular singularity, the one singularity of truth burst itself open within itself. And when you put the un sound at the end, what that's saying is we have, you're not going to get this from a linguist. You're only going to see this from someone who really digs down into not only word translation, but letter translations, and moves beyond the story level or the topical level, what's called Peshat level, and digs down into the experiential, or you could say the mystic or the directly experiential Gnostic level. They'll deny that any of this stuff, these layers exist, even though the themes run through all of the ancient texts, especially the Torah and the New Testament. So you've got the one singularity burst itself open as its own blessing within itself, and we are that blessing. We are that bursting open, and we also are that non-dual singularity of being. And that's just one way of looking at Abun. If you translate it as our father, the problem with that is it's just a masculine outer translation, and people think of some outside father. They don't realize that what that is really actually saying is that we all come from one common source, because there is only one source. So, I mean, it's a much deeper way to see that. So the our part is the realization that we are that. Whatever God is, I am, is a good way to put it. So,
awesome. And we do have two callers.
Beautiful.
First one is 901. You're on the air.
Hi there. This is Brenda in Memphis. My original question, I'll do second, but Dale, you started saying what the room meant, and I didn't know if I got that explanation. And then my second one was in regard to the word wrong. I believe at some point in time I understood Michael to say that the word wrong did not exist in the Aramaic language, that there was only right and not right. So if you could address both those issues.
Sure. Well, the sound at the end of Avun, it's like O-O-N or O-U-N, un, and what that means is all of you or all of us, our.
Okay.
So it's talking about, you could say people or souls, whatever you want to say, but it means all of us. If I was talking to one person, then the suffix is a bit different. So it just means all of us. So when you hear our father, the our is the un sound. You would hear it also in Michael's work when he talks about Tuve Hun, the first word at the end of the blessed are, what we know, the each of the Beatitudes that's in the beginning of each of those, the Hun would be all of you. It's basically saying, all of you are, you know, when Michael, you know, that latent neural structure that he speaks of, that's basically Yeshua looking at a group of people saying, all of you, or all of us. So that's the one. The other was it wrong you were saying? Yeah, with wrong is interesting because I think one of the big problems with wrong, in the way that we think of it here in the West especially, is people don't realize that Semitic languages, and Aramaic in particular, was a language that didn't really talk about a lot about outside things. It talked more about internal perceptions. The way I would explain that is, like as an example, the word te, for in the Lord's Prayer, te te malkuta, thy kingdom come, te doesn't really mean come. What te more accurately means is, it means I desire for you to come to me. So it's not an outer thing like come to me, but it actually meant in Aramaic it was talking about the inner dynamics and speaking of that, saying I desire or I would like for you to come to me. And wrong is kind of the same thing. The language didn't really look at a lot of outside things and label those as right, wrong, positive, negative, whatever that may be. What it would talk about is how it would talk more about the inner perception of what appears outside rather than what appears to be outside. And probably I would say the best way you could put that into English in terms of we think right and wrong, the best way you could put it into English from the Aramaic idea would be ripe or unripe. And it would be the same as, like Michael says, right or not right. There is no wrong. Unripe, of course, is the word bisha, which was translated as evil. And all that meant was not now, not present moment, not fertile, not open right now in the moment. Like fruit, if you want to judge fruit as ripe or unripe, I'm not going to be able to look at a stone green banana today that's hard as a rock and say at exactly whatever 10 a.m. next Friday morning, this will be perfectly ripe. And I also couldn't look at a greasy black festering banana that's rotten and say last Friday morning at 10 a.m. this was a perfectly ripe banana. It's only something that happens in the present moment. And the idea of right or not right is, I love the way Michael would explain it when he talks about a quarter and you're looking at one side of the corner and I see heads on my side and I say, you know, what do you see with the quarter? Or what's this quarter? What does the quarter look like to you? And the person says, well, I see an eagle or tails. And it's like, well, that's not right from my perception, but yet it's also not wrong. I love what Shakespeare said. He said, there's nothing good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. And I think it's the same with that. There's nothing right nor wrong, but being or non-being makes it so. Anything that happens from the non-being or the bushel basket self, the dead or unreal self, anything that comes from that is not right, but that doesn't necessarily make it wrong. Problem is when we label it wrong, all of a sudden we fight against it, and then when we fight against it, what becomes obvious to us is something is wrong, and then that's what manifests in our life is wrong, wrong, wrong. So it's kind of a catch, and there's a choice in there. But and this is just the best way I can even put it in English, there's just a lot of concepts that people have, especially here in America in particular, that are even foreign in the English language to other places that speak English. But there's a lot of things that I sort of dance around with the English language that I completely get in Aramaic, but a lot of times bringing it into English isn't always the easiest thing, not because English is necessarily a bad language, but it's definitely not a very conscious language. It's very masculine. It's a conglomeration of so many other languages that most people don't even realize the meaning of the words that they speak. Aramaic was much more simple. It was very simple in its prefixes and its suffixes. It was very simple in the way that it would speak of reality or inner or outer experiences, whatever they may be. And English is kind of so much more complex and baffling and confusing, I think, for most people. Not so much for us because we're born within it, but anyone that I know that had to learn English as a second language anywhere after the age of 20 or so, they said it was like having teeth ripped out of their mouth, you know, like it's a really intense language to learn in such a way. And Aramaic's just simply not like that. It's very simple, it's very clear, and it's always been like a puzzle language to me, or like puzzle pieces that or building block language is the other thing that I use. If you understand what the root meanings are in Semitic languages, it's pretty easy to learn at least a rudimentary understanding of many words, because they're really just a conglomeration of a main root that is usually three consonants, and then there's prefixes and suffixes before and after them. And that's about it. In English, it's this hodgepodge of all these different words, and it becomes baffling. And we think right and wrong. We think inside, outside. We think, you know, positive and negative as good and bad, when positive doesn't mean good and bad doesn't mean, or negative doesn't mean bad. And we think of good and evil as two things fighting against themselves, and what they actually meant was ripe or unripe, meaning closed or open. So it's interesting. I realize that in a lot of my talks, because people ask me questions, and a lot of times I'll respond to them and I'll say, you know, the question that you're asking is so much more loaded, not so much right and wrong, but people ask me questions that they think are simple, and they might be simple from the American perspective, but from the Aramaic perspective, it's so far removed from what we think of here in America, in the U.S. particularly, that in a lot of cases, I almost realize with some questions I can't even answer them in a way that most people could even pick up unless they were really open. So, yeah, there is no actual word for wrong. There's also not a word for good in Aramaic, which is interesting too, because good simply meant ripe. It meant open in the present moment. It also meant to be on the bullseye, to hit, if you were to fire an arrow and hit right into the center of the target, if you hit the bullseye, that was the word tuv, which meant goodness, or ripe, R-I-P-E, like fruit. But it didn't mean good in the way that we think of good. It wasn't a stagnant judgment. It was more of a realization that it's on target. Best way you can put it. So you probably the best way to put it, there you go, in English, on target and off target. That's it, rather than right and wrong. So
that would be all, also, I believe that Michael had said that, for instance, in the Bible where it says in the beginning God created him and he said it was good, yet the word good was actually in its proper place and time, which would correlate with what you just said about it being right.
Yeah, well, it says, and it was tuv. It's the word tuv, which is the root of tuvehun. That means ripe. Yeah, proper timing, proper placement, open in the moment. Another place that shows up is when, same root sound, when Yeshua was talking about seeds that are thrown either onto fertile soil, which is ripe, which is tuv soil, which is, again, proper placement, proper timing, fertile, as opposed to arid soil, which the word that he used then that's written down is bisha, which is evil, which doesn't mean evil as in bad. It means unripe, arid, not open, not fertile, but not the right timing. So it's exactly the same thing. And that gives you much more of an idea of the Semitic understanding of what we think of as right and wrong. But that's the ancient Semitic understanding. What's happened in the last about 150, almost 200 years is a lot of modern Semitic speakers, definitely within Judaism and those who speak Hebrew even as their first language, right and wrong has unfortunately seeped its way into the language itself. They're using the same words, but they no longer mean ripe and unripe. And they'll talk about that in like an argument match about the Torah, and then they'll push it away, and then they'll go back to right and wrong. A lot of the ideas that have come through in the last couple hundred years, people, the younger kids, don't even realize the depth of a lot of their language. So, and there's a lot of ideas in modern Assyrian Aramaic that are actually European, and many of those people that speak modern Assyrian Aramaic have no idea that many of the ideas they have about their native language aren't the actual original 2,000-year-old ideas. They're actually 400 or 500-year-old European ideas, and that makes it even more complex. So kind of a slippery slope at times. And, you know, either you're present and open or you're in the non-being mind, and that's not good or bad. It's, you know, there's truth with a capital T, and then there's my truth with a lowercase t. We're going to have a lowercase t if we're in a physical body, but the gist or the goal for me is to consistently recalibrate my truth with a lowercase t back to the B truth with a uppercase T. And that doesn't happen through thought. That happens through the release of thought in the forgiveness process, so that the new thought can come through from a place of presence rather than a simple indoctrination of someone else's belief systems and ideologies. So, yeah, it gets deep.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've used
absolutely
the example quite a bit. It seems to be a very clear way of presenting the difference between the right and not right and the wrong issue. So thank you for reinforcing that for me. And that's the end of my question.
Beautiful. Thank you. You're very welcome.
Awesome. We do have another caller. We're down to about 4 minutes, though.
I'm open.
Area code 541.
Oh, I'm on mute. Here I am. Thank you. Yes. I tell you.
Hi, Julie.
Maybe that's, we should do a whole show of mute, you know. hi there, Dale. You know, I have a question about bushel basket, and I'm wondering even if in the Aramaic, it, the words for bushel and the words for basket, if they start with the letter B. And then the, here's the thing. I know you've talked about this before, so you don't have to go too into it, but Bibles these days are changing words a lot to fit the so-called modern English and fit the publisher's requirements. But I am actually finding in the Bible that they don't even use the word bushel, and I think bushel has a lot to do with measurement of some sort, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was called a bamana. It was something that, you could say scoop, like one way I explain it is if you have a huge thing, like a huge tub full of cornmeal, and you scoop part of it away, and you look at what you scooped away, and you say, this is not that. This cornmeal is not that cornmeal. It's now separate. That's basically what bushel means. It means to measure out and to somehow remove something from its source and then judge it as somehow being separate from its source. And that's what bushel basket means, exactly.
Oh, okay.
It also means, another way of looking at the same thing. The word is sata. It's the root, bushel is the word sata, which is the root of the word satana, which means to a being divided against itself or something fragmented against itself, something that's fighting against itself. But another way to look at it is a bama or a sata was also something that you... If you have a candle and you've got a candle that is burning and you have one of the little candle snuffers and you put that candle, a snuffer or anything, you put a bowl on top of a candle so that you can no longer see its light. It's the same thing, bamana. And, of course, in Yeshua's teachings, if you put that bamana close enough to the light and it becomes heavy enough, it falls onto that light. And then, of course, it extinguishes it. But he was saying that you can't actually extinguish that light. But what happens is you put enough junk on top, you're not going to see the light anymore. And then you're going to complain about darkness when it's our beliefs that are causing it in the first place. So.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for that. And one more quick little thing. When you were using the word good and talking about the word good, what came to my mind is maybe that it could mean actual.
Actual, you know, even, I would say, almost like in the Abraham Maslow sense, actualized, or actual would be, that would be a very good way to bring it through, very high fidelity. You could all, you know, I think one of the words that I used was calibrated. You know, something that's calibrated, it's still something else, but it's the thoughts, to keep our thoughts calibrated to truth, calibrated, and you know, as Abraham Maslow would say, actualized, or... Yeah, that would be exactly it.
Oh, good, and that might have something to do with then manifested. That's what we want to manifest from.
And that's what heaven on earth means. That's what it means on earth as it is in heaven, not from my paltry little disconnected BS thoughts, but rather the thoughts of, you know, what Einstein called the thoughts of God. Let those thoughts come through from presence, from being, rather than from the non-being mind, and that's what it meant on earth as it is in heaven, not
on the ground
as it is in the clouds.
On earth and in heaven, we are out of time. And we thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Dale. Thanks for the question, Julie. Have the best year yet of your eternal life, and tune in Monday to hear the continuing saga of the van.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.